Okay, State Representative Phil Moffitt is a monthly guest on our program. Of course, they're hot and heavy into the session right now, and yesterday was the release of the long-awaited, retooled pension bill. And Representative Moffitt joins us now for his quick take on what the retooled bill looks like. Good afternoon, Phil.
Hey, Cruiser.
What'd you think?
Thanks for having me on.
But, you know,
when they announced this morning the pension bill, we had a little press conference, and I think they used the bumper music from Funky Cole Medina then, too. So that was pretty good.
Well, I knew that, and so I programmed that way for you.
That was pretty awesome.
So was this worth the wait? Does it do? And I know you did a lot of listening, and you all talked to a lot of constituents. There was a lot of feedback about certain portions of the governor's plan or the original plan that was crafted with the governor and the then Speaker Jeff Hoover and with Senate President Robert Stivers. There are some things that were not in the governor's original proposal, including something he seemed to be kind of close to, and that was the idea that everybody would be kicked over to a 401k type plan. What's your general feeling on the retooled version? Do you think it meets the concerns that you heard from constituents?
Well, you know, my overall impression is I'm really disappointed that there isn't a mandated 401a plan. But, you know, that's the way things broke in terms of the cost of implementing reform. And when you hear people talk about cost in this pension plan, the cost of funding the plan is what it is. What we can choose through our reform is when we have to put certain large blocks of dollars into the plan. And had we moved people to a 401k plan or a 401k style plan, it would have cost us $600 million additional dollars to do that up front. And $600 million is a substantial percentage of our budget. And we just don't have the cash right now to do it. So largely, everybody's pension that is currently retired and are in the plan today, those things don't change at all. It changes significantly for new hires. They don't go into a 401a plan, but they do go into a defined contribution style plan called a hybrid cash balance. And that plan allows, the protection in that plan is that the state is guaranteeing that those people never lose money in the stock market. So if the stock market goes down below zero in a given year, the people that are in that plan will actually get 85% of a 10-year average. And that 10-year average, if you look back over history, has never been below zero. So the amount of risk that the taxpayer has, the burden goes down with that type of plan, so I'm happy about that. And it doesn't build more long-term deficits. The odds of that happening are low, so I'm happy about that. So, it is what it is, and I think it'll pass as it's written, most likely.
Oh, as it's written, you don't think there'll be significant changes in the Senate, or you're not hearing anything from your colleagues in the House going, well, when it gets over here, we're going to look at this and this.
We have essentially been in negotiations with the Senate for probably 8 months now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the negotiated bill.
Okay. Any Democrats involved in the negotiation? Were they invited to lend some ideas, or was this pretty much crafted by the Republicans in the House and Senate and in the governor's office?
I wasn't involved in those meetings. My suspicion is that it was predominantly Republican-driven.
Yeah.
That's not to say that Democrats weren't briefed, but I don't know how much they participated in the negotiations. I just wasn't there.
3% of salaries that were going to go into some health care account that was going to be deducted out of teachers' checks, that's gone. Teachers would have to work.
Correct.
Teachers would have to work longer. Does that apply to only new teachers, and how much longer would they have to work before they would be eligible to cash in on their full benefit?
Well, and I'm going to pick a nit here. Right now, the way the system works is that if a teacher works 27 years, they get paid on a benefit factor, and it's a number that's used in the calculation of their benefits. Under the current retirees that are out there, if they were willing to work 30 years, that benefit factor went up a little bit, so they made a little more money by staying a little bit longer. The way the plan is proposed by the Senate, is that once, if you have 20 years or more of service in the as a teacher right now in the plan, nothing changes. It stays the same way it's always been. But if you have fewer than 20 years, you can still retire when you have your 27 years in or when you meet your whatever threshold you have in your retirement plan. But if you want to get that enhanced benefit, that enhanced calculator, you're going to have to work a few more years. So it's it isn't 3 years. I believe it goes up to five.
I see.
So so it does require them to work longer. Now, new hires, teacher new hires, they're in the hybrid cash balance plan that I mentioned before,
and it's
a really strong match. I mean, the employee puts in 9.105% of their salary, and the employer, the school system, puts in 8%.
Wow.
So it's almost a 100% match. And then, of course, they get all of that money and the performance in the market, you know, as I described before, that going forward. Now, every new hire, including new teachers, I believe, have a small window where they can opt out into a 401A plan if they want to. And if I were a new teacher or a new state employee, it's what I would do, because I think you'll get better returns in the 401A plan than you will through the hybrid cash balance.
Yeah.
So
that could,
but it is available to them, but it's not mandatory.
Not mandatory, yeah, because the hybrid plan just guarantees a minimum return on investment. It just guarantees you're not going to lose anything.
Guarantees you're not going to lose money, and when you get upside, let's say that you get 10% return that year in the market in your retirement plan, you get 85% of that 10%, so you get 8.5%, and the other 15% is swept aside and held in reserve in case the market ever goes down. So they're building a reserve so that in down years, if your principal goes down, they have enough money to cover the principal.
Yeah.
And it's it won't always work well, but it will work in almost every year. So it's better than what we have today.
Let me bring up a couple of things here real quick. Phil Moffitt's with us, State Representative Phil Moffitt, on the newly revised pension plan. The unused sick leave, that's gone. Right? The state workers won't be able to use unused sick leave to gain time credits or to more quickly get to that retirement age, which I've never heard of that except in the public sector, where you could bank sick days, basically,
right,
and use them later. You know, most companies, like the one I work for, you get a set number of paid sick days a year, and that's it. They don't carry over. That's the number of days every year. So this would be gone, but I mean, there's a fair amount of state employees that have taken this or were counting on this benefit. What about current employees? Would they be able to use the sick leave they've accumulated? Is this only going to apply to new hires that they're not going to be able to bank this sick leave again, or does it just go away now?
Here's how it works. If you're currently in the pension systems today, you can continue to accrue sick leave until the last day of June of this year, June the 30th. Whatever that number is on June the 30th, you can use that to enhance your pension.
Mm.
Okay? So
right,
we're going to allow you to accrue it till then. But every day after that, you still accrue sick days, and you'll still be paid for sick days. So if you build up a bank of a few dozen days or even a few dozen months of sick leave, you will be paid for those, but it will not be counted in your calculation for your pension benefit.
I gotcha.
So you're still paid for them. It just doesn't go for the pension benefit. So if you've been in the system for 17, 18 years, you have a big accrual of sick days. On June the 30th, that accrual stops. It's frozen until you retire, and you can use that towards your high three or high five, depending on, and I'm talking about your high 3 years of salary or high 5 years of salary, and accrue your benefit from that.
The Senate Bill 1 also requires state pension plans beginning in 2020 to use this level dollar approach, which level dollar, I guess it's a set amount, you know, almost like, let's say you got a car payment or you got a mortgage payment. Okay, there's a set amount that you send to your mortgage lender or whoever gave you the car loan every month. And what this would be then would be, starting in 2020, there would be a level dollar approach to paying down the $43 billion in unfunded liabilities, and it requires that level payment to be made each year over 30 years. It would not be tied to whether or not there's growth in the government payroll or reduction in the government payroll. This has got some people a little bit upset, Phil. They think it ought to be tied more to the growth in the government payroll. Because, and let me ask you first, what's this level dollar amount going to be? Are we looking at $2 billion, $3 billion, $1.5 billion? I mean, what is going to be the level dollar amount for 30 years that's going to be baked into the state's budget? Do you know what that amount
is?
Yeah,
and I believe that number is somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.1 or $1.2 billion a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's the idea here, and there are a lot of comparisons to a mortgage with this, but that comparison isn't real valid. Because in a mortgage, if you have a 30-year amortization, your principal balance it only goes down as you make your payments. And what we're talking about is a pension deficit, which relies on the performance of the stock market. And if the market crashes a few times, we may have to adjust that level dollar payment because if we have a 30% drop in the market, then that 30-year payment isn't going to pay off the entire deficit. The deficit actually gets bigger. So, it's a way to try to be able to budget in the long term, and if the market works well for us, it'll come close to paying it off, I think. Mm-hmm. But if we have several recessions over the next 30 years, and we have one about every 5.8 years on average, then if we have several and they're deep, we're still going to have a pension problem 30 years from now. It'll just be smaller.
But right out of the gate, that now becomes about 10% of the state's annual budget, right?
Yeah, it's pretty close. Our total budget is about $21 billion, and of that is about $10 billion of that is what we collect in state taxes. The rest is federal dollars. So if you count it as what we collect, it is. It's about 11 or 12% of our annual balance, or our annual tax receipts, I should say.
So you got to hope the economy doesn't go into recession or deep recessions, and you got to hope that by 2020 we start to see the fruits of economic growth or at least some significant tax reform that helps lead to growth. Now, some are going to say, well, no, you're going to need to find new revenue sources another way, but somehow there's going to have to be increased revenue in order to...
That is exactly right, and the hope is that it's increased revenue as a result of increased economic activity and economic growth. That's the hope here. If we don't achieve that, then we'll have no choice than to put more money into it, and it will require more revenue some other way.
Why didn't it start with the fiscal year 2018 budget, just 2019 budget will go into effect July 1st. And why not now? Is there just not the money there now to do it, or the tax reform thing needs to be done?
And I don't fully understand why this is, but in our briefing they explain that any change we make in the pension system, there's a one-year lag before we get started.
Okay.
So it'll be the 2019-2020, our fiscal year is from July 1st to June 30th. So this will first hit, and I believe in July 1st of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right, you don't anticipate. I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
I was just going to say that's the 2020 budget year is why I'm saying that.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to get a kind of a timeline wrap up. You don't think there's going to be that many changes out of the Senate? They're going to have a hearing, obviously, sometime next week?
Yeah, the quickest the bill can move through the Senate is 5 days because of the normal process that a bill has to follow. So they introduced it yesterday. So in theory, they could be it could be out of the Senate on Monday. I don't know if it'll move that fast. And then after it gets out of the Senate, it'll come to the House, and then we have a minimum of 5 days to get through the process over here in the House. So my suspicion is within 15 calendar days from now, we will have this thing done.
Do you anticipate it could pass with no Democratic votes?
Well, there are enough votes, and the Republicans have a supermajority in both House and Senate, so yes.
Yeah, so it could.
It's possible. I don't know that that's the way it'll break, but it's possible.
Phil, many thanks for helping us here with a little primer on trying to understand this complicated legislation, and we'll be talking more about it and watching it over the couple days, and look forward to seeing you when the session's over.